Welcome to Into the Nuance, compassionate, evidence-based pre-med advising. Join us each episode as we unravel the complexities, debunk myths, and explore the many paths to medical school. Whether you're a freshman or a pre-med veteran, we are here to provide informed, realistic, and hopeful advice on your journey. Tune in for interviews with experts, stories of triumph, and useful tips as you continue towards medical school. This is Into the Nuance, and we are so glad you're here.
Yeah, so what has been going on in our worlds lately? I know.
Maybe we could go around and kind of be like, what's been going on?
Oh my gosh, it's been like, what's going on with the MCAT world? I don't know what's going
Registration
on.
Registration was a disaster on Wednesday, which I don't know why they decided to move it up so that it was the day after students got their scores back from their September dates. But that was a very stressful 24 hours for me because, you know, we had a lot of students who took it in September with the intention that they may retake, but weren't sure. And then they got their score back on Tuesday and had to make the choice of registering on Wednesday. So it was just a lot of last minute emailing and jumping on calls. And then of course the registration had tech issues. People were being double and triple charged, which was really not cool. And they're saying it's 7 times charged. Yeah. And then they're saying, oh, it'll take 2 to 5 days to refund. And I'm like, these are college students who, like, this is probably a debit card. They don't have very much money on, you know, so that was kind of a rough time. Luckily, all my students were patient and they eventually got their date that they wanted, but it took 4 to 6 hours. And I just don't know why they didn't stick with what was working and do it over 2 days, the way we've been doing it at the end of October every time. So
yeah,
I half suspected
it
with the Bacon of America flub that also happened on Monday. Financial thing that was causing the problem, not the registration system, because it stopped taking payments.
Right.
So what I think, or stopped taking payments correctly. So what I know it's conspiracy theory but you know, maybe Pearson uses Bank of America, and when their system went down, it took Pearson down with them.
Because
the AMC side of things actually worked to their credit for once.
I mean, it was a long wait for many students.
Yeah.
But other than that, it did work. So that's what's been going on in my world, was a lot of like frantic, should I register? Should I not register? Yeah. If I'm going to register, should I register for January or for March? And it's tough to have those conversations in a tight time frame, right? Like, I'm sure you guys do the same thing, because like realistically, these are decisions that should be very well thought out. And it's a lot of money to register. They increased by another $10 this year. It's $345 now. So it's money. And I feel like a lot of students are kind of trigger happy with registering and then end up spending way more on registration than they needed to, because they end up rescheduling or having to cancel. And so I've been counseling students lately on and kind of waiting till they're ready to register. Like, there's always dates that end up moving around and people get off waiting lists. And like, if we're unsure, why put our money down, but when we're not 100% on our plan, you know? So that's kind of been my new take, is like, let's not spend $345 until we're sure we're going to take this test. So
that makes sense. I mean, yeah. I know people cancel last minute all the time, so it's very possible to get into a last minute date. And I didn't hear too much. I had some conversations just a couple of days ago with everyone getting their MCAT scores back, which I have a whole lot to say about that. But unfortunately, I don't know if everyone's just kind of caught up in it, but I didn't hear too much about the issue. So thanks for telling me about that. I'll follow up with some folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know this, Amanda, but the people that did get hit with the problem, like the multiple charges and stuff like that, they opened up a new day just for those people.
Yeah.
February 17th. But only those people that got affected by the problem, and they can reschedule for free to February 17th. As like, say maybe they did it and they ended up getting tossed to the back of the queue, which some of my students did.
They did. Yeah.
So they ended up having to register for a test in May or June instead of when they wanted to in March or January. So the February 17th date is available for those
interesting
Oh, so
So
they
they,
opened up a February date just because of
this
this?
is the first February date that I have in recollection that they've ever.
So February dates are possible, is
They are possible. It's
my
just they
word.
choose not to open them.
Okay. I might be dating myself, but I think there was another time in history that there was a February date, and I
It was
think it
during COVID.
was it during COVID? Okay. I was
Yeah,
like,
it
I
was.
seem to remember that. I thought it was a hurricane a long time ago.
That might have also been true. But the post-COVID year 2021, they did February
That
dates because so
they
many
can
students didn't
do.
get to take it during 2020. So,
They can do anything they want,
yeah,
basically.
so it makes me curious. It's like, well, then why aren't we normally having February dates? Because, a
Yeah,
lot of
they
schools
usually
take a February break, and that would be really nice for students. So,
AMC, every time you ask them that question, says students are not interested in taking the test in February.
I think that
That's
is not
their
true.
canned answer.
Which students are they asking? Kindergartners?
Which students are they asking? Yeah, I mean, like, it's just, I think just more dates is better for students because it is tough to have a 6 week period between testing dates, right? Because there are students who, like, for life circumstances, want it in January, but it doesn't happen. And then to have to wait an additional 6 weeks instead of 2 or 4, it's just a lot. It's a lot to continue studying.
Not this thing, this registration craziness that happens with MCAT, it doesn't exist with any other test except for the test that, like, ACT and SAT, it does happen because those are only offered certain times of the year. But like DAT, OAT, GRE, any of these other ones, they can just schedule it 3 or 4 weeks before they take it, and they will always be able to take it because it's offered every day that the testing center is open.
I
It's
mean,
the
I get it, right? It's a 7.5 hour test. Like, you probably need more staffing for a test like that. But, and I do understand, like, I'd had a conversation with somebody from the AAMC with about this, and they were like, well, it's because, any student who has accommodations now, it's a 2 day test, and that's different staffing. But they could just limit accommodation dates to a specific set of dates, right? Like, there's workarounds.
Yeah,
So,
I think this is all a control thing about managing the scoring system, and there's
yeah,
30 things to
that's
get
what I think
feedback
too, but
on.
that's what we're getting close-lipped about, is that it's not about the scoring, but yeah, which is fine. I've had, so that's been my other to-do list of the month. September is, of course, like, getting everybody who's new to this process up to speed on what the MCAT is and what MCAT scoring is, and our most recent percentiles from April and all of that stuff. I mean, nothing new, right? It's been the same as it's been for years, but for people who are new to this process, it can feel really daunting. So it's been a lot of webinars on what is this MCAT, and why does it seem so different from every other test? So that's been my
Your
September.
world right now. Yeah.
Exactly. That's my world. What about you, Joanne? I mean, it's interview season, right?
It is interview season. I'm still wrapping up maybe like three or four secondary writers, which it is what it is. If that's you, if you're writing secondaries in October, is it ideal? No, but it happens. So you just try to get them done as fast as you can. And then interviews are rolling in. I've got a bunch of people who already have interviews. And of course, I have a bunch of people who don't have interviews, and that's totally normal. I think right now what I'm trying to do mostly is just like manage expectations, because people who don't have interviews, of course, are hearing all the things on all the places about interviews, and they're panicking a little bit. And why haven't I gotten an interview? And what's wrong with me? And what did I do wrong? And it's sort of like just trying to manage that a little bit, because it's hard. I get it. Like, you don't understand why someone did and you didn't, but it's so complicated. Like, there's so many reasons why that could be. And so just trying to help everyone understand that they didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with them. Everything is okay. It just, they don't send all the interviews on the same time, at the same time.
I think this is actually the worst part of the cycle,
Oh, yeah.
because getting the application done, that's tough. You got to know all the writing and stuff, but it's the waiting. It's the
Yeah.
fact that you submit all this stuff, you work so hard and get it turned in, and then it can be months. It can be
Yeah.
until next year until you hear anything from some of the schools, and so it's so nail biting. And you're stressed out nearly 24/7 for months in this part of the process, and it's just so
Yeah.
hard.
I remember it was probably the worst year of my life. I'm going to be honest about because it was the year I didn't get into medical school, but you don't know, right, for months. And I wish I had. And now that I know, I tell students, it's like you got to fill your life with other things that you enjoy during this time because I was really just fixated on waiting for those interviews. And I just remember just feeling like my whole year was sitting by my phone, by my computer, praying for
Refreshing.
an email to come through. And that's just not healthy, right? Like it's just not a healthy environment to be in. And so, utilizing that time to try to distract yourself and to like do other things.
Volunteer.
Yeah, do anything else that gets you off of your
Anything.
phone, off of your computer, off of Reddit, right?
Out of your
Like,
email. Yes.
any kind
Yeah.
of volunteering too. Like,
Anything.
anything.
Like, well, having clinical and non-clinical volunteering is really beneficial in an application. So you just look at what you've done and you do the opposite.
Go
Yeah.
volunteer to pet an animal shelter. You
Literally
look like
anything.
puppies all day long, and you know. Or work at a
Anything. I
coffee
mean,
shop. I mean, it could be
oh yeah,
literally
go work at a coffee
anything.
shop. Literally anything. In education right now, they are so desperate for teachers and subs. Like, go be a substitute teacher. Like, go influence some kids, be a positive role model. Like, there's so many ways you can give back to society right now.
I got a student that just did that. They went and got their emergency license, and they're teaching high school for the next year.
Yeah,
And
it's
yeah,
a
that's great.
no med school is gonna go, oh, a teacher, that's horrible. Like,
Everyone want,
no
yeah, everyone benefits
one's
from a teacher. I know. And I didn't like, I do remember I was sitting on the couch. Like, that's all I remember from those 9 months was just sitting on the couch next to my computer. Like, with a every time I got an email, it'd be like an email from like a clothing store, and I'd be so sad. And it was just
That's
so.
terrible for your mental health.
It was so bad. And like, that's the thing is, I don't think I would have had as bad of a time had I not been so fixated, right? Like, sure, like a series of slow, month over month rejections never feels good. But I think if I'd had other things of value that I was doing, like afterwards, right? Once I wrapped up the year and was like, oh wait, I didn't get into medical school. Then I went and I volunteered. I worked at a horse barn because I love horses, and I did that for the summer to like recover my mental health. But I wish I'd done that like during that process
Throughout,
instead.
yeah.
You know, there was no benefit to me sitting, like I didn't need to be near my computer all the time, right? So
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of feeling of like I can't be doing anything else. Like, I need to just be waiting and be ready, but like that's not healthy. So.
No.
And you also want to make sure that, I mean, worst case scenario, you're gonna have to reapply. So you want to be still building your resume up during this time too.
Yeah.
So it's not a time to just stop doing things because life has to go on, and you want to make sure that you've shown that you've done something new since your last application if you had to reapply. You know, like granted, we're crossing our fingers we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Plan
Yeah.
for the worst, expect the best.
Let's talk about a January MCAT. So this cycle's been really interesting for me. So honestly, the way I've advised this topic has changed so much from when I started out as an advisor to today. And I think part of that is because the admissions process has evolved a little bit in this regard. But here's the topic this year that's been very, very different. So someone got their MCAT score, lots of people actually get their MCAT scores between July and September, and it didn't go well. And they want to go ahead and apply because they already did all the things and they already submitted and they are ready to go. So they go ahead and apply with few schools and they plan to take a January MCAT. Now, we all know the risks involved in that, right? Most schools are not going to accept a January MCAT, most MD schools, allopathic schools. But I feel kind of certain that there are some DO schools that will take January MCATs. And so if I always ask that question, are you willing to go DO only? Because if you do that plan, you're kind of like done with MD. You're just saying, I'm going to go DO. And they usually say, yeah, I'd rather do that than nothing at all. And then they are planning right now. I have a bunch of people planning to take the MCAT in January and they're in this cycle. I've never in all my years like told anyone to do that before. So this is like
Yeah.
new territory. And I can't
I,
wait to
yeah.
check back in like March and let y'all know if that works.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good way of kind of what Doug was just saying of like hope for the best, but expect the worst. Like, the worst case scenario is to reapply, right? And if you are going to reapply, you'll need an updated MCAT score that's hopefully better. So, best case scenario, that score does get taken into account in this cycle. Worst case scenario, you still have an updated better score for next cycle. So there's no lose to it except for the pressure, I think is the one thing I experience when I have had several students, I don't do a lot of admissions coaching. So like a student comes to me and says, I'm staying in this cycle, but I'm taking it in January. Can you help me? I'm like, sure, that's my job, right? Is to just try to get you where you want to go. And the risk that I see is not actually the plan. I think the plan actually puts you in a really good spot either way. It's the pressure that students experience to need to do really well on that January test date while also worrying, as we talked about, it's a very, very rough time, also worrying about the, am I getting interviews? Am I not? And so I think it takes a lot of mental strength actually to do a January test while applying in that same cycle because it requires compartmentalization. Right, where you're able to focus on the MCAT without putting all this worry and stress and pressure of the application cycle on that experience, because anxiety does just make it harder to learn. And so I have had students where we haven't been able to be effective doing that purely because this cycle experience that they're having is so stressful and they're not able to focus, they're not able to study, they're not able to sit and take the practice exams effectively. But the ones who can compartmentalize and be like, you know what, I've rolled my dice and I'm going to see what happens and I'm going to put my effort towards this test and not be as stressed because I'm already applying. So like anything is better than what I'm doing now. Then it goes really well. So that's what I've seen is that it's more of like the mental game that is the deciding factor. I don't know what the outcomes are in terms of the application cycle. So that's going to be where I'll be curious for
That's what
you.
I'm also very curious. And
To be fair, with DO schools, since there's many of their deadlines are in the new year, and since they don't do rolling admissions, I don't see why they wouldn't take a January test.
Yeah, no, I think they
Um,
will. Even
is
if it's not published, I think they will consider it. And like I said, it's just something that we just like taking a January test and the application cycle has always been so taboo, right? Taking a
Yeah.
September test was so taboo. So now that we're pushing it to January, it's just one of those things where I just never thought I'd be going there with people and I am and we're gonna see how it goes. I mean it's kind of new territory. But here's the other thing is like people who have pretty low scores and they're going ahead and trying, they kind of know, right? They know that their shots this cycle with the low score are low. And so rather than sitting there and just waiting to get rejected, they see the studying as a way to distract them from that waiting. So they're not waiting for an acceptance. They're restudying, knowing that, like you said, Amanda, it can very well go the other way. They're going to have to reapply. But they don't waste the application cycle because they put so much energy into getting it ready. And that's always the risk with not having your MCAT score when you apply, right?
100%. I mean, as we talked about in a previous session, right? Like the ideal is to have a good MCAT score that you're happy applying with before the cycle starts. But we know that that's not necessarily the reality for many students. And so, but it's just like it's a risk. It's how much risk can you take, right? As a person, how willing are you to kind of put yourself out there without all the pieces versus like, do you want to have an application that's got every box checked off? And would you rather wait to do that properly? I think in my younger years, I would have, just pulled the trigger. But now that I've seen how stressful it is for so many students, like I tend to counsel waiting. And, if I know that the MCAT's not going to happen for them before the cycle, there's no harm in taking an extra year so that we can know what to expect instead of worrying. But that's just my take.
Oh, 100%. I try. I definitely do try. But sometimes, again, like you said earlier, my job is not to tell someone what to do. I'll tell you all the information. You decide with the information I just told you. And if you decide to move forward, of course, I'm going to support them wholeheartedly if whatever they decide. But I think as long as we tell them that it comes with risk and everybody has to know the risk that's involved there. So I'm just stressed out with him. with those January dates.
I would say I just don't understand how people can do that. Like to be that willing to just jump without having everything planned out in advance.
Well, okay,
But
so
I'm a guy that just scares the crap out of me.
the thing is that really this is, I mean, this is not a new problem, but here's the problem that every year people encounter. So they're taking their practice exams, they're getting five tens. They think they're on track. They get their MCAT score to 491. It's so far off from what they thought that, I mean, what, how do you advise someone if they tell you they're consistently hitting four tens on their practice exams? What do you say? I mean, they seem ready.
Yeah, so this is something possibly I deal with like weekly, it feels like. No, it's a very common thing. And I have learned that it's one of three things. And I've been a lot more blunt, I think, about this with students than I've been in the past, because we've got to be really honest with ourselves if we're going to make good decisions. And so the first question I ask is, how honest were you in the practice exam environment? And like, really, truly, like, I'm here to help you. Did you Google? Did you look things up? Did you change your answers? Did you pause the test and take extra breaks? Right? Like, did you take it at 10 instead of at 8 a.m.? Right? Did you take it on your bed instead of in a testing environment? All of those things are going to impact you because they're different than the real
Yeah,
test.
that
And
makes
even
sense.
if your knowledge is the same, it's going to feel different. It's going to feel stressful. Even if you're just saying, oh, I was just double checking that I got it right, I didn't actually change my answer. That feels different on the real test. And so, like, I recognize that people do this. Like, that's a learning style that works for some people in undergraduate to kind of like check themselves as they do practice. It's just not realistic when you're practicing for a performance. And a lot of students don't know that until after the fact. And so, that's always my first question is like, how honest were we? And like, that's okay. You can admit to me, like, I'm not saying that that was a bad thing to do, but what it does tell me is that the practice exams weren't an accurate measure, and we do need to address some things in your studying, right? If they tell me, no, Amanda, I took it at 8 a.m., I didn't have my phone on, I treated it like test day, and I was genuinely scoring these tests in the way that I was going to see on the real test day, then I ask about the test experience. You know, did you sleep well? Did you cram the night before and stay up until 2 a.m.? Did you have a bad morning? Did you panic? You know, did you have a migraine? I had a student just yesterday that we're talking about not getting a good outcome in the September test dates, and she's like, I don't understand, I thought I did really well, I felt really good in these two sections, and then they went really badly. And I was like, okay, talk me through what happened during the break, in the, you know, the midpoint break. She's like, well, I got a migraine and had to ask to lay down in a dark room. And I was like, then how could you possibly have thought that those sections went well? And she's like, well, I thought I like recovered, I thought I like focused. And I was, you had a migraine. Your head was literally pounding. There's no way for us to have an optimal experience there, right? But I have to sometimes dig, because students will, like, on performances, we lock in and we try our best and we think we did our best, which you did. It's just that it wasn't an optimal environment. So that's number two. Was test day itself just causing us problems, right? And then the third thing, and I think this is always something to be aware of, is that, like, you know, on test day, we tend to fall back on our bad habits. Did we change our answers? Did we skip questions? Did we run out of time? Like, did we kind of default back into habits that we've done before all this studying and hard work? You know,
Yeah.
that was that, you know, nothing happened physically, but like, we ended up doing all of our bad study habits and testing habits.
That's
So,
one of the insidious things too. I've
It's
seen.
hard to, yeah, it's hard to go back a month and realize that that's what happened, right? Because it's like such a high stress environment. But usually, after some targeted questions, it's one of those three. Now, if it was the second, if it was that something happened in test day, my response is you did nothing wrong in your prep. Go take it as soon as possible because your prep was good, everything was good. You just had a bad, that one day was not optimal for you. And we got to practice and get ready for it and, you know, have medication ready to go and all these things. But like, you did nothing wrong in your prep. You don't have to change anything. You don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You did great. But we do need to get you in that testing environment sooner rather than later because you've learned all those things, right? If it was the first, we got to go back to, we like, if you were not being honest about your practice exams and the testing environment, we got to start from scratch and get you back on a study plan that actually is practicing and preparing for test day, probably take six more exams, all of that. That's going to take time. We can't just like throw you back in. And then if it's the third, We need to reinforce those skills so much that that's the default. And that depends on the student, whether it takes a lot of time or a little. But for that student that they defaulted back to their bad habits, everything we do is timed. Everything we do is 90 minutes. Everything we do is under pressure so that they can get used to doing proper test taking skills under pressure instead of improper. So it's a long-winded answer, but usually it's one of those three. And it's not that the student did anything wrong, right? It's not like they're all of a sudden like didn't remember any content. If they were performing well in practice and that was genuine good performance, once in a while you just have a bad day. You have a bad race, you have a bad game, and that's not your fault, but you do need to recognize that it can happen and get back on the horse as soon as possible.
And then the bad thing about that is the horse doesn't take off again till January.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where I wish we had more regular tests, right, for these students. And that's why I love students taking the exam starting in March, because then we do have really frequent
Fine.
exams. So I love a March test date because if something does happen, we know we have exams every 2 weeks moving through. And we talk about voiding. Like if we know a bad experience happened, like a migraine or a terrible night of sleep, and that test is really important, it's a retake or something, we void, we take it again in 2 weeks. Like we just get right back on and try it again. But that's not an option when the test was September 14th. So, it's tough.
I know. I wish I could have sent that. I have a lot of people. I wish I could send you for that kind of assessment, because no, that's really good.
And Doug, I don't know how you handle that last one about like the when they default all back to those bad strategies, but that's the hardest one for me as a coach, right? Because it's like, how do we get them to do the things that we know they're capable of, but in the testing environment?
That's honestly, I think one of my biggest challenges with students all across the board is even doing it during practice, like doing the things we talk about in a session and saying, okay, what question are you going to do first? Are you going to do number one first? Are you going to get to question three because that's an easier question first? And like in sessions, they're like, yeah, definitely. Like, and they're showing you all the right moves in the session, and then they do a practice test and you go, did you do the questions in order? Yeah. Like what did we do this for? Why are you doing this? And so that's one of the most frustrating things because they know better.
We regress to the mean when we're stressed, right? We regress to what we're most comfortable and used to doing. And it's just hard.
And you can know exactly that it's not going to work. You can consciously know that and still will default back into that. It's like it's a fear response. So you stop reacting intellectually and you start reacting emotionally. And an emotional person is not going to be in control of what they're doing as well as a person that's reacting intellectually. And so that's a hard thing to teach. Because in a lot of ways it's something you can't teach as much as you have to, help people moderate
Manage.
themselves, so to speak. Help understand, like if I'm starting, it's the whole idea of mindfulness, right? Mindfulness, you have to be aware of how you're reacting to things. You have to be conscious of the fact that you're slipping into these behaviors. But that's difficult for anybody to do. Like, I'm not a
It's
Zen
difficult for
master.
me to do.
Right? I'm not a Zen master, and I can't just like know exactly that I'm upset in the moment and not reacting emotionally. But helping them learn to recognize those things and not just like saying, like I'll often ask that question in a class where how do you know you're having a hard time? And they'll say, oh, well, I feel like in my head, it's not going well. No, that's not a recognizable sign. Start looking for concrete signs. Like my leg starts shaking, or I start getting, I start breathing faster, or my writing, my penmanship goes downhill. Like look for actual outward signs of that emotional out, like the emotional breaking, so that you can see it concretely. Instead of having to recognize, like in your head, like I think I'm having a breakdown. That's
And/or like
the
the
hard one to
self-talk,
do.
right? Yeah, like being like, well, when I start thinking, oh, I should have studied this, It's like, okay, something, I'm starting to get anxious. And it's really hard. I mean, there's little tricks, right? There's like, I always tell students, like, every other passage, just close your eyes, take two deep breaths and check in. Am I starting to feel elevated? Am I starting to feel anxious? I had a great student skill that I've been using a lot, which is a lot of students, when they get anxious, jump to the answer choices without reading questions. Like, they'll just like try to pick an answer and move on without actually like reading what's going on. And they'll use the periodic table that you get as like a cover, so that they don't see the whole question. They just see the first sentence. And that's been really helpful to like slow everyone down. So there's definitely tricks, but I think a big part of kind of like postpartum, like diagnosing what happened in the exam almost, right? Or like, all the like kind of looking into this after experience, looking back, is like, do you think that stress or anxiety may have had an impact, right? Do we think that that might have been part of the reason we didn't see the same results? Which is very different. I should mention, this is very different than a student who scores as they've been scoring in practice. Like, it may not have been the outcome they want, but students who scored like an average of their most recent three exams, like, there's nothing bad about that test experience. We just didn't get far enough in practice, right? So I think that's a very different conversation than someone who scores 15, 20 points less than they were scoring in practice. So,
Yeah. That's where I feel like the rescheduling fees and the gaps between tests become the issue. Because people, like, they'll make financial decisions over smart decisions of when to do their test. So if somebody already has a scheduled test, a lot of times if they're financially strapped, they might stick to that test date, even though they know darn well that they're not going to score up to snuff. And like the system is set up so that that becomes a reality. It sucks. Like I can't afford, like if I'm 30 days out from a test, the reschedule fee goes up. And if I'm 15 days out from a test, the reschedule fee goes up again. And I'm cheap. I besides being cheap, I may not have the cash to.
It's a lot of money. It's a ton of money. Well, and I've changed my tune on my advice for scheduling MCAT dates. I used to be like, no, let's schedule it earlier rather than later, so that you feel that urgency, so that, because like, accountability is obviously a huge issue with studying for such a long time. And so I'm like, okay, like, if we're thinking between January and March, let's schedule January, so that we like can assume January. I've changed my tune because it just costs too much to reschedule. And we don't know in November if you're ready in January, usually, right? And that's the 60-day mark. So what I've been telling students is schedule for March. And then it's a lot less money to move it back up to January, because we'll be within the 60-day. And so if we're in December and you're feeling ready and we're feeling like, okay, in a month we could take this, then it's only $50 to reschedule. But if we get to December and we've scheduled for January, now it's $200 to reschedule.
And moving a March date to a January date is a heck of a lot easier than going the other way around, because people start getting cold feet and start moving the January dates later. It means all of a sudden there's this big open spot in January.
Tons of spots in January.
There's tons of spots in January. So if you
I think that's been
March.
a thing. So what I usually tell students, and I don't know if this is helpful for you, Joanne, but like, I'll say, okay, if we're kind of like, I don't know if I need a 4 month or a 6 month schedule. I don't know if I'll be ready to take it in April or in May. I always say schedule out the latest date you want to take it as kind of our boundary, but then build your study plan for the earliest date that you want to take it. And so
You can always
all my
move forward.
crew are scheduled for March, but our like their study plan is the last January date. And that
Interesting.
way, if the study plan goes awry, we still have an extra 6 weeks, right? And that's great. But if they're feeling awesome and we hit like December 20th and they're rocking it and they're seeing close to their goal score, we bump it up and then they get to take it early. So that's been actually like a stress reliever, and it's not something I used to do, because I used to be so worried about accountability, right? Like, oh, we got to have it so that we don't slack off. But to be honest, like, these students don't want to slack off. Like, if we're procrastinating, there's a bigger anxiety not slacking. And I think that, like, I used to be worried about my students slacking, and you
No,
guys don't
that's
slack.
not.
Slacking is not a thing that pre-meds do. It's if we're procrastinating, it's because we don't know what to do or we're too anxious to work, not
Right.
because we don't want to do the work. And
Yeah, we
so,
down. Or there's life things
or
and
there's life.
control. But that's interesting. I've never heard that, and that's see, I'm learning something new from every podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a new strategy for me.
It's been very effective for me with doing that with students, is getting them, like putting them on that track for a January test, but scheduling March. You've got a lot of flexibility in there. And the students often surprise themselves and realize, oh, I am ready for a January test. And it's like that also helps with going into the test and scoring better, is because they're not freaked out. They're not like, they're not against the deadline anymore. They made the choice to scoop their test up, and they're probably going to score better because of that, because they're feeling ready
Oh,
instead.
it's that self-efficacy. Self-efficacy is
Yes.
so powerful when it comes to performance on anything. So 100%, that makes total sense.
The students I have doing the best on their MCATs are usually ones that they're not super concerned about their outcome, honestly. Like they know
Well,
they're
let's,
going to get the score they need, and they usually exceed that score. Like one of the biggest example that I've ever had was a student was planning on going to DO school that she didn't want to apply to anywhere else. It was just DO school. While prepping, she was, we got past the 500 mark. That was awesome. Got past the 504 mark, which is for DO school, that's the average. And she was scoring 508s and 510s and things on practice tests. She really didn't care. She knew she was going to be able to get into DO school with the score she was getting on her practice tests. She walked on with a 520.
There
She
you
just didn't care that it like the stress was gone. There was no concern about like, will this get me into school? It
go.
was,
Right. I just
it's,
got to take
I'm
this
gonna get
test and
in.
move
I just
on.
gotta jump through this hoop. And so she just did really well that day because she wasn't concerned. And like,
I
really.
literally try to get people to buy into that theory. I'm like, this is not the thing that keeps you out of med school. This is just a test. It's just stuff
It's just
you
a
learn in
test.
college, you know? It's no biggie, but they're all like, whatever, Joanne, whatever.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of language around like, if I don't have a 4.0, I need a good MCAT score. And so I think the vast majority of students don't have like a 3.8 or above.
No.
And so the vast majority of students feel like they need a 5.12 to a 5.15 because that's what they've been told. It's what's on the internet. And it's just not true. And it's not necessary. And it's also to your point, like thinking that way also doesn't help you get there, even if you do need to get there. So, like, if it's all in our head, we might
Relax
as
a
well
little
pretend we
bit.
don't care, right? And so, yeah. And I think, like, the other thing I would say is, like, nothing on this on the test is out of the realm of possibility for any student. Like, students can do this test. It's just a long test and it's a lot of work. And so, it feels like it's very important because of how much work it takes to do it. But the test itself is not meant to be this impossible
I mean,
obstacle,
if you
you
look at it
know?
percentage wise, like getting a good serviceable score on the MCAT is like getting a C plus or a B minus.
Yeah.
It's like if you're around 80%, correct?
75 to 80% is
Yeah,
good. Yeah. I
that's
would
all
say
right as
80%
well.
is ready, right? 80% is ready. If you're scoring 80% on UWorld, you are rocking.
Yeah.
Like you are good to go. But like, of course, if you're coming out of undergrad, that feels very stressful, right? To be like, that's a B minus. But on the MCAT, yeah, 80% is amazing. So yeah, it's one of those things where I think like, I guess that's kind of where I'm at with students at this point, is like managing and setting expectations. I think that's where you're at, Joanne, with the application, is like, yes, like we've got work to do, but like let's try to manage our timeline, manage our expectations, manage what's reasonable, and like take some deep breaths and work through it one step
Yeah,
at a
because
time.
we still have a long ways to go. And I think, yeah, we just everybody right now, I wish we could all take a group dip, deep breath in, and it's all gonna work out. We just have to wait and see how it's gonna go.
Doug, have you tried out the new section bank?
I haven't yet. I haven't had the chance.
I did it. It was interesting. So, Joanne, I don't know if you saw, but they released 300 new MCAT questions through the AAMC materials, and they did it through the section bank. So the section bank is 100 questions of ChemPhys, 100 questions of BioBioChem, 100 questions of PsychSoc. And it's definitely, at least in my opinion, you can disagree, Doug, is the best set of questions we have outside of practice exams, purely because it's like ChemPhys, right? So it mixes the chemistries and the physics in the way that the real test does, whereas all the other QPACs are like physics, chemistry, biology, and they separate it out, which isn't as representative. So I always have students do the section bank like 4 weeks before test day to like really prime them up with this material. Plus, it's our only PsychSoc passages that we have. So now
Is
we have 100 more from each.
are they harder than the previous materials?
No. So everyone says that the section bank's really hard, which I find that they are, right? Like the passages are really complex. There's some funky figures. Like comparatively, section bank questions are definitely challenging. What I found, here's my take. ChemPhys, the physics was funky. The physics is stressful looking. Like they put out the like if object distance is infinity, what is it? Like, you know, things that like if you're not comfy with numbers and with the physics concepts would look really intimidating and like, oh my God, I didn't study this. And then you take a deep breath and you're like, okay, wait, I actually can work through this, or there's information in the passage to help me. There's a couple weird things. They're actually asking them to do like legit vector math instead of just like max min vector math. I know. I'll have to see what you think of that question. But so physics was like intimidating looking. I imagine students are going to say that it feels super, super hard. It took me a deep breath and a second look to be like, oh, they want you to critically reason through this and assume that if infinity is on the denominator, that means the number is basically zero, right? Like those kinds of questions. And so that was interesting. The orgo, super straightforward, as basic as it gets, like shockingly basic, which was great. Gen Chem, lots of it. Lots of like, what element is this? And like, where is this on the periodic table? So that was good. Passages were more straightforward. Biochem was way easier, in my opinion, than the first section bank, but funkier content, like wanting to know transitional epithelium versus stratified epithelium, which I find to be a little detailed, but just a ton of very, very basic, like what type of enzyme is this? You know, what type of mechanism is this? So very, very straightforward. And then psych is psych. Lots of wordy passages with the study design and the data in the words. So I personally like figures a little bit better. This one was like a lot of writing for me because I had to like be like, okay, if they said that the result was that this one increased, like I had to like really write it out. I could imagine at the end of a test, students who are not used to taking notes on passages and reading through it would really have a hard time like digesting those types of passages, which is where I've seen, I think, some students have a lower than usual PsychSoc score this past couple of years.
I think
Just
that
because, yeah, because it was very like dense.
might be an AMC response to the PsychSoc scores being so relatively high section.
Yeah.
The average on that section has been climbing consistently.
Yeah. Because I think they went a little like content-y, like a couple years ago, right? Where it was just like, what is this term? These passage sets I found to be like, sure, there were terms, but there were also just like I felt like I was slogging through the passage to figure out the information. So, but they were great. I was very happy with them largely. I'm just like, I'm thrilled to have 300 more questions to give to students that are representative-ish. They seem to represent what my students have said about the exams, which was like, bio felt easier than I expected, but there were finicky little things that I think changed student scores. And then ChemPhys looks really scary, but it's not as bad as it looks. So.
And just for the record, even with this new question bank, we got to remember these
You
questions
never
are
know.
probably a few years old, and the MCAT will always evolve past. So, like, no sets of questions, no matter who releases them, is a perfect model of what you're going to expect to see on test day.
Yeah, it's a lagging metric, right? So.
So, it's better than nothing, but it's still not perfect.
Yeah, I would just say like I would recommend same thing as before, where the section bank is part of the later part of students' prep. So both of these section banks being kind of in the last 6 weeks to really like fine-tune the skills more than the content, because the content information is less robust than the skills. Yeah. So at least we got something new.
I'm so glad I have you guys to inform me on all of these things. That was so helpful. Well, next time we'll have more information after all of this MCAT stuff settles down. You'll have to update me and everyone else on how things went.
Yeah, likewise.
I have a feeling I'm just going to be neck deep in interview prep for the next few months, which is a good problem to have. No one's complaining here. I love interview prep. So, as usual, you guys are super awesome, and your students are lucky to have you because you guys are both so insightful about this stuff. So I guess we'll talk to you all later. My name's Joanne Snubb from My Honest Advisor.
And I'm Amanda Brehm from the Brehm Method.
Doug McLemore with ICOSA Prep.
We'll see you next time, guys.
Bye.